And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and Phil Conant is here.
Yes, good afternoon.
We're freezing. It's Toronto. It's February, and this is what we deserve. This is some sort of punishment. Oh, it's Family Day.
It's Family Day. So
in Ontario.
In Ontario. So freeze with your family in Ontario.
Yeah.
In the U.S., it's Abraham Lincoln's birthday, but they don't call it that anymore.
No, it's called President's Day, I believe. Yeah, yeah. And, of course, that brings us to the subject of today. We're going to talk about Black History Month. And Norman Otis Richmond has written an article which discusses the origins of this matter, and it also provides a very healthy corrective to people's sense of where this all comes from. And so we'll be talking to Norman about that shortly. But later in the program, we're going to be featuring an interview with Garrett Rappenhagen. And he's a very important gentleman to be talking to at this moment, because Garrett Rappenhagen has an article. It's published in Salon, I believe. You can find it everywhere. It's titled, "I Was an American Sniper, and Chris Kyle's War Was Not My War." And a lot of people spent millions and millions and millions of dollars to make sure that one story got out, and we think it's important that another story gets out. By the way, we pointed out on this show, there's no shortage of snipers. The American Army, American Marine Corps, Navy SEALs, everybody's got snipers all over. There's been this, Clint Eastwood and other monopolists have tried to turn it into the story of one man. There's only one sniper in the whole world. Anyhow, we will come to that. And his name is Garrett Rappenhagen, and he's with the American Veterans Against the War. I'll get the right title for you in a moment. I'll do it now. Yeah, the IVAW, if you want to go and have a look, IVAW.org, by way of preparing yourself for that interview. But we're joined now by Norman Otis Richmond. Are you there, Norman?
No.
No, you're not.
How are you doing?
Somebody very close to you, doppelganger, has shown up. Your article is the African Liberation Month. The time has come.
I don't want to cut you, but I thought we wanted to talk about Nina Simone as well.
We are.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, no, actually, I had thought, we were thinking, and we might yet play some Nina Simone, I wanted to ask you about her, but I wanted to start, if we can, with the article. It's in the Pan-African News, I believe, among other places, and it's called the African Liberation Month, The Time Has Come. Your point, you have several points in there. One is that you say it irritates you that people say, well, at least we have this month, and it's been, you know, they gave us this month. And you point out that this wasn't given by anybody. This was created by a very important major black leader in America, Carter Woodson. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. Carter G. Woodson started his Negro History Society in 1915. This was a few years after the Berlin Conference, and you know, a lot of African-Americans, many African-Americans or African-Americans as a group have been kind of viewed as being, you know, kind of parochial and kind of not really international. But Carter G. Woodson at one time ran the public school system in the Philippines, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, black history, it started off as Negro history. And the point that I made is, article is that, you know, we went from a week to a month. We went from Negro to black to Afro-American, mm-hmm, to black, and I'm saying now we should go from, instead of just merely dealing with you know, what's his name, the Peanut Man, who's the brother that did the Peanuts? Washington Carver. Pardon.
You got it.
Yeah, George Washington Carver. I'm not trying to put him down, but I'm just saying that I think that we should try to deal with people like Dessalines and you know, people that fought for liberation.
Let's you tell that story. You once approached a famous Hollywood actor and said, if you had your choice of playing Toussaint, or Dessalines, or I forget who else.
Christoph.
Yeah. Tell about that.
Well, it was at the Toronto International Film Festival, and Don Cheadle was on stage with Denzel. They had just did this movie, Devil in the Blue Dress, I think, Devil in the Red Dress, which the Walter Mosley film. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were all of these women taking photographs of Denzel, and they were really, really, really into the celebrity thing. And Denzel had just finished filming Malcolm X. And that's when The Guardian, the newspaper, was out, and The Guardian had read an article about Denzel had just finished reading The Black Jacobins by C.L.R. James. Mm-hmm. And Denzel was looking very, very irritated on the stage. He was, at that point, I guess
had enough of being famous.
Yeah, and all of these beautiful women, mostly of African origin, were taking these pictures, and they were really into the celebrity thing. And Denzel was kind of fed up. So I asked him, I says, I understand you just read C.L.R. James's Black Jacobins. And he laughed, and he says, yeah. And I said, if you had your choice, who would you play, Toussaint L'Ouverture, Henri Christophe, or Jean-Jacques Dessalines? And he bust out laughing and said, if it was left to me, I'd play Dessalines.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want to end up in Paris in a prison dying. He wanted to lead the struggle to victory. Yeah. Well,
also, think about the characters he's played. The former slave in Glory, and of course Hurricane
Carter, Malcolm
X. He's cut his teeth on some very tough characters. Now, also, you say from that that should be part of what we're studying, that the Black Jacobins should be in the school system,
in the curriculum. But the situation is this: is that you know, the whole question of Black History Month, it was never meant to be just a month. When Carter G. Woodson visualized it, he said that we should take a subject. Let's take Haiti, the Haitian Revolution. We'll start March the 1st, and we begin to study women in the Haitian Revolution. Mm-hmm. It's my understanding that Dessalines' mother taught him how to fight. Mm-hmm. So we would take the women in the Haitian Revolution, we would study March 1st, 2015, and on February 1st, 2016, we would present what we found out.
Uh-huh.
It was a year-round situation.
A year study, and then
It would come back with results.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying, but the bank, and I'm not going to give the bank any publicity, but the bank controls Black History Month here in Toronto, and the bank controls Carabana here in Toronto. And I don't know if they did it this year, but many years we kick Black History Month off at police headquarters.
Yeah.
And well, I don't know.
That's a seal of approval.
I don't know if they could do that in the United States, and I'm not saying that mm-hmm. the Africans in America are any more better or worse than in the Africans any place else, mm-hmm. but I don't think that the police would let a bunch of Negroes mm-hmm. come in there talking about Black history, you know. But
yeah. Well, it's certainly problematic, particularly, you know, once again, here we are. I mean, the 2014, the second half of it was taken up entirely with a case of, frankly, police brutality and the criminalization of African Americans. To the point where now the new head of the FBI says, well, yes, it is a matter of record that we discriminate in hiring and we discriminate in policing. Just a matter of, he said, you know, the numbers don't lie. Full on that matter.
They just started hiring African FBI agents because of they had to in order, you know, they wanted to infiltrate, I believe they wanted to infiltrate the Garvey movement, and they needed a somebody black to do that.
What a wonderful reason. By the way, you, Norman, can help us with it. You remember when the media was entirely white, all reporters, and of course it's still overwhelmingly white, but it was the uprisings in Detroit, Washington, D.C., Chicago, Los Angeles, Richmond, Oakland. And then they said,
I think they said,
we can't send white reporters. They had better hire some black reporters because the white reporters were afraid to go and report.
I think that's how Ed Bradley got his job. You know, the great Ed Bradley, 60 Minutes Ed Bradley, I think he was in Philadelphia, and I think they basically told him that, we don't want to go out there and risk getting hurt, so, you got the job.
Yeah.
And if you can come back with the story, we will definitely take it.
A number of careers started that way, no doubt. Well, you also take up a gentleman I'm not familiar with. Tell us about Richard B. Moore and his problem with the nomenclature, the naming of things.
Well, Richard B. Moore, I actually saw Richard B. Moore in 1967 in Montreal. Richard B. Moore was one of the founding members of the African Blood Brotherhood, and he joined the American Communist Party and stayed in the American Communist Party, but he was born in Barbados. In 1889 or something like that. And he had a bookstore, but he had a problem with the term Negro, and he wrote a book. Trying to figure out the name of the book. I bought the book, but I can't find it.
I wish it was for television. We could walk around and help you pick it out.
Richard B. Moore. Mm-hmm. It was something about the easy name. Well, Richard B. Here it is. It's called Richard B. Moore. The name Negro is its origin in evil use, and mm-hmm. he basically took the position that dogs and slaves are named after their masters, but free people name themselves. And he had a whole argument that the term Negro was we were African. Negroes is Spanish for black, but we have a right to name ourselves what we want to name ourselves, as opposed to letting anybody else name us in terms of.
Wasn't that the whole battle? I mean, we remember the Black Power movement, Black is Beautiful, Muhammad Ali saying, "What is my name, fool?"
That he was too. Yeah.
And of course he was asking Floyd Patterson, who couldn't get it right. And so he actually nearly tortured Floyd, but that was at any rate, that whole thing had to do with this. I remember the New York Times trying to resist the use of the word black. They did not want to use it, and they wrote an editorial, why we are not going to use that word. But they did. the war was won on that, but it remains. It's not a resolved issue, is it? You must remember when Jesse Jackson and I forget who was with him. They had called a press conference.
I don't know the woman's name, but there was a big debate between.
And they decided on African American.
Right, and there was a big debate on TV one time. It may have been on PBS. It was Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, Colin Powell's cousin. His name is Llewellyn. He's a African American with Jamaican roots, and a sister. Colin Powell's cousin Llewellyn said that he wasn't an African. His people were born in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. And Kwame Ture said, "Well, my people were born in Trinidad, but but I'm not a Trinidadian, and I'm an African." And they had a sister on there, an African woman born in the United States. She took the term African American, but the whole African American is a term that Carlos Cooks, who was the head of the African Pioneer Movement after Marcus Garvey died, Carlos Cooks was born in the Dominican Republic, and he came to Canada. He came to the United States when he was a teenager. He took the term. He said we should call ourselves African American, meaning African people born in the Western Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. So if you're a Canadian, you're African American. If you're Jamaican, you're an African American, and a lot of Caribbean people don't like that. But Carlos Cooks took that position. But I see this, Black History Month, African Heritage Month. It's like imperialism has really, African people have, we have really been mixed up. When I say, we banks give us our names. Master give us our names.
This is Norman Otis Richmond, and the article, by the way. I just remind you, African Liberation Month. The time has come.
It'll be in Caribbean Camera tomorrow.
Yeah, the Caribbean Camera. But, you know, you have a very nice, I want to agree with your formulation. You say the question is history for what? And the answer is for liberation.
Right.
The struggle for history, of course, is to know who did what to whom, who took whose labor and who took whose property, and who committed crimes against humanity, et cetera. And, you know, that kind of history can be very liberating. A detail I thought of that might be of interest to Canadians is that a name here is John Graves Simcoe, very highly regarded, and people like to boast, well, Simcoe ended slavery or made a decision not to have slavery in Upper Canada. But he left Upper Canada in 1796, and 1797, he was in Haiti with 7,000 British troops trying to defeat Toussaint to restore slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And to turn those slaves over to the French royalists who were still residing there. And that was a British imperial project to help their French royalist friends defeat Toussaint and give power back to the French royalists. Very kind of a detail I never hear people mention here, but your concept of, you know, history can be liberated. That's an important aspect because there is a kind of what I call Tory history, which says, well, you see, we're ahead of the Americans, Simcoe said, in Upper Canada, where, you know, we're going to end slavery. By the way, he didn't, of course, end slavery. What he said was, with the deaths of these slaves and their children, then there won't be any more slaves. But that is not ending slavery for the guy who is a living slave. He remains a slave. Anyhow, that's apropos. So when we do our Toussaint history course, we want to talk about the fact that he was defeated, Simcoe was defeated by Toussaint.
Mm-hmm.
And he went home an angry man, and they gave him the job of going off to rule India, but he got a stomach ache and died and saved everybody in India the grief. This is, again, it's Norman Otis Richmond, and February was chosen for the birth dates of Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, and since it's Black History Month, you better turn that around. Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln, who did know each other, and at the end of the day, they accomplished a lot.
But if there was a dispute, you could always go with Douglass's day.
That's right. If there's any question, go with, and you give his birth date is February the 17th, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and Lincoln's is the 12th. But was that Carter Woodson's idea
That was Carter Woodson's idea. That was definitely Carter G. Woodson's idea. Yes.
Yeah.
And John, well, first of all, like Black History Month, a lot of the people, like in England, they celebrate Black History Month in October, and there was also another group of people, a Puerto Rican guy by the name of Arturo Schomburg. They were contemporaries of Carter G. Woodson. There were struggles, you know, line struggles among them. Arturo Schomburg and those guys, well, he was born in Puerto Rico, you know, spoke Spanish and French and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, some people say that they were more radical than Carter G. Woodson, but Carter G. Woodson won the battle. When I say he won the battle, because he lived longer and stayed at it longer. But you know, the Miseducation of the Negro, that book is a classic. You know,
We should also remind everyone that the rise of the Black intellectuals was, of course, resisted every step of the way. And the major universities, a man like Woodson, had a lot of difficulties with. And I can recall one of the most respected names, the sociologist, now I'm going to say his name.
C.L. Franklin? No. I'm not C.L. Franklin. You mean
C. Wright Mills.
Yeah, C. Wright Mills, right.
C. Wright Mills, at the end of his life, you know, he died of a heart attack in his 50s, but he wrote an article saying he deeply regretted his not noticing or being unaware of Black history. He said that he thought a great flaw in his work. But, and I would say, well, thank you for admitting that, but it's not exactly an accident. The American academic institutions did not want to hear about Mr. Woodson and his theories. I mean, he had an academic post, I think, at Howard, and then later, I forget where he was later on. He went through Harvard, but that's like Du Bois went through. They didn't want him to stick around, as far as I know.
Woodson didn't go. I think he may have started high school when he was 18 because he was in the cotton fields just doing labor. But yeah, he started his education late. Like I say, and I always
he caught up.
Yeah, but I always like to point out that he, you know, he went to the Philippines and had something, you know, worked there.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, again, this is Norman Otis Richmond, and we have a few minutes here. I'd like to ask you, we better do this thing. Last week on the program, we played Mississippi Goddamn by Nina Simone. You yourself went to see her perform once. Why, were you going specifically to see her, and what does she mean to you?
I saw her twice. I saw her once in Detroit, and I saw her once here. But Nina Simone was like one of our heroes because she was so outspoken and... you know, I personally loved her music, but she stood for something, which, you know, made it even more important. And she supported the struggle. And I remember reading her autobiography, and she talked about hanging out with Lorraine Hansberry, Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, Godfrey Cambridge, who I think has a Guyanese background, and she said that her and Lorraine Hansberry used to sit around and talk, little girls talk, and they would talk about you know, Marx and Lenin and revolution, so on and so forth. And
she has a great song. What do you think of her song Revolution?
Oh, I love Revolution. I love Revolution. I love Young, Gifted, and Black. I love Center Man. I like Nina Simone's. I like her piano playing. I like her her singing. I like the stand that she took on the struggle for the liberation of oppressed people. And the fact, once again, she lived in Barbados. She lived in Liberia. She was with Selma with King. I guess closer to Malcolm than she was to King, because she was, you know, she was kind of, she was not for nonviolence, and she made that very, 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 very clear. But she was for self defense, and but she supported Dr. King and so on and so forth.
Well, yes,
but she was one of the. I do a column in this newspaper called The Burning Spear, and they have a picture of Nina Simone, Bob Marley, Fela, and John Coltrane, and Mary McCabe. So, I mean, I see her is in that pantheon of, you know, revolutionary cultural workers.
Mm-hmm. And one that had great impact. Now, she died abroad, right? She was in exile?
She was in France, yeah. Mm-hmm. She lived in Liberia, she had lived in Barbados, she had lived in, and traveled throughout Africa. She was very close to Aminata Museka, a.k.a. Abby Lincoln. And I believe she was with Abby Lincoln when Abby Lincoln took a trip to Guinea, and Sekou Touré gave her the name Aminata. Then they went to Zaire, and, Mobutu Sese Seko gave her the name Museka, and I'll leave that one alone because I'm not really a fan of
Mr. Mobutu
or Mr. Mobutu, but yeah. So, but Nina was with Nina.
He thought it was
Nina,
pretty good moment for him, I think.
Oh yeah, but Nina was with was with Abby or Aminata in Guinea and in Zaire, or I should say Congo. The Democratic Republic of Congo, when she got those names. So she was well traveled, and like I say, I saw her here in Detroit. I saw her here in Toronto, and outstanding performances. Mm-hmm. She was she was a historical figure that, I mean, her music will live forever and ever and ever, because, you know, the song Revolution is, you know, Revolution is here.
It'll keep happening, yes.
Yep.
Norman Otis Richmond, we really appreciate it. The article is African Liberation Month. The time has come. It'll be in published tomorrow, and where?
Caribbean Camera. It'll be published on Wednesday.
Wednesday in the Caribbean Camera.
Thursday. I'm sorry. I'm thinking about Pride. It'll be in the Caribbean Camera on Thursday. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're very grateful. Thank you very much, Norman.
Thank you.
Bye bye. Norman Otis Richmond, and you're listening to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. And, of course, we're on the web, taylor-report.com, Facebook /the Taylor Report. What do you know? I think we also we're listed as tweeting, I think, but infrequently, but we're getting there. And I'm not as backward as Letterman, who, you know, gave up on air, said, no, I quit, can't do it.